This is Vis-a-Vis, a podcast series brought to you by the Alliance Program at Columbia University. Vis-a-Vis features conversations that challenge our understanding of key global, economic, and social issues by casting them in a transatlantic perspective. I'm Emmanuel Catan. I head the Alliance Program, a partnership between Columbia University and three French universities, Sciences Po, Paris Panthéon-Sorbonne, and École Polytechnique. Every episode, I sit down face-to-face with, or as we say in French, vis-à-vis, some of the most insightful thinkers on both sides of the Atlantic. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Over the last few decades, Sciences Po has significantly increased its footprint in research, becoming one of the world's leading institutions in social science research. The Sciences Po ecosystem is structured around five disciplines: law, economics, history, political science, and sociology. Research priorities include the analysis of social policy, economic transformations, social inequalities, environmental transition, and the digital revolution. In the past year, the Sciences Po research community produced over 600 articles and 100 books and attracted major funding from European and French funding agencies. At a time when academic freedom is threatened in many parts of the world, the innovation and social impact of these research ventures are more important than ever. To discuss Sciences Po's research and its contribution to the common good, Vis-a-Vis is honored to welcome Professor Dina Waked, Dean of the Sciences Po School of Research. Dina Waked holds an SJD, she is a Doctor of Judicial Science, and an LLM from Harvard Law School, an LLB from Cairo University Law School, and a BA in Economics from the American University in Cairo. She teaches courses on global antitrust law, comparative competition law, and economic development, law and economics, regulation, international business law, and law in the Middle East. Her research and publications explore issues linked to competition development, critical law and economics, and economic growth and distribution in the global south. She has advised a number of governments and international organizations on competition law compliance and the assessment of competition law reforms. Professor Waked, welcome to Vis-a-Vis.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I'd like to start by asking you to provide perhaps a quick overview of the Sciences Po research ecosystem. How is it structured? Who are the main players? And how does teaching and research intersect?
Great. So maybe I'll start with the School of Research. So I've been the dean of the School of Research since September of last year. And I often describe the school as the umbrella that connects many of Sciences Po's research ecosystems. Because on the one side, we host all of the doctoral and research-based master programs, but we also form the bridge between the different research centers and our teaching missions at Sciences Po. So generally, as you said in the introduction, our ecosystem is structured around five main disciplines: law, economics, sociology, political science, and history. And each are organized as a department. And each of these departments is connected to one or more of our 11 research centers, which form together this very vibrant and interdisciplinary community that is home to about 250 permanent faculty members and researchers, but also about 300 doctoral researchers and 300 research master students at any time in their parcours. So to name just a few of these different research centers, there is the Center for European Studies and Comparative Politics, the CEU, which focuses on comparative politics and European governance. There is the Center for International Studies, the CERI, that brings together area specialists and international relations scholars. We also have the Center for the Sociology of Organization, the CSO, which studies particularly institutions, work, and regulation. We also have the Center of History, which explores long-term social and historical transformation, the Center for Research on Social Inequality, which focuses on social mobility and inequalities more generally, and one of the centers that I'm personally affiliated to, which is the Sciences Po Law School Research Center, which is known for its critical, global, and interdisciplinary approach to law. Our research there connects legal reasoning to broader questions of political economy, social justice, and global transformations. And finally, at Sciences Po, we also have several cross-cutting initiatives and thematic chairs. For example, I'm personally involved in an interdisciplinary initiative with my colleagues from the economics department on law and economics. There's also the center or the laboratory for interdisciplinary evaluation of public policies, the LIEP, the center for, the research and education program of gender studies, Présage, Cities Are Back in Town, which studies cities. And these different initiatives generally bring scholars from the different disciplines together to address some of the key challenges and key issues of the different subjects. And what I always say is that we're really lucky at Sciences Po that we can engage in this real interdisciplinary work, whether, for example, one is working just in economics, working on development strategies, interest rate, mortgages, growth models, and so on, distribution of wealth, or in law, interested in examining rules of property, contract, market regulations, how these are the background rules that affect how resources are organized and channeled towards some and excluding others, whether in sociology the focus is on inequality of class, gender, race, or social mobility, or in political science on the ways power struggles, institutions, and wars perpetuate unequal outcomes, or in history, how we think of somehow how did these inequalities and how did we get to where we are when we look back to colonialism, slavery, conquest, empire, and economic orders that created some of the realities we're living today. All of these issues don't exist in silos. So most of the answers to these questions are generally intersecting, overlapping, they inform one another. And what is really great about how the Sciences Po ecosystem really works is that it really encourages that kind of interdisciplinary work and this cross-fertilization from one discipline to the next. So whether you jump from economics to law or from sociology to political science, always with history in the background, that's really what is unique about a place to do research and inquiry, whether it's for the faculty or the students, that can really and very easily engage in that in this dialogue across the different fields. And that's something that we actively encourage, not only with these cross initiatives, but also as the discipline itself transforms and invites collaborations with others. And back to the part of your question about the intersection between teaching and research, this is another one of our distinguishing features, and maybe we'll talk about this some more later, is that both faculty and researchers and teachers bring their ongoing knowledge into the classroom. So it's really something where students learn through inquiry, not just absorbing knowledge, but producing it, engaging in debates and in this discovery. And there's always this connection between what the researchers do in their research, but what they also bring to the classroom. So in general, it's a really interconnected ecosystem between the different fields, but also between the type of research and the fields of research and the teaching that is then produced, that is really encouraging dialogue, experimentations, and collaborations between colleagues and researchers across the different centers and departments and schools.
Right. It's really interesting the way in which interdisciplinary approaches can provide new pathways for understanding the world. And also what I'm really interested in is the way in which this kind of research can also have impact or some impact on social policies and on society generally. I'm thinking, for example, of the barometer on social trust, which Sciences Po has been publishing over the last 15 years, I believe. This barometer on political trust is an annual report that measures different aspects of French citizens' trust in politics. And we know today how trust in politics and trust in different forms of authorities is also at the center of political debates. This publication, of course, has become a kind of focal point of public discussions on the relationship between citizens and the state. And that makes me curious about the impact of social science research generally in shaping public debate. What role do you think researchers should play in that regard? Should they merely aim to cast light on public issues, or should they seek to influence public debate by, for example, drawing attention on underreported social and political issues?
So I think one of the most valuable things research can do is to help us see things differently. It gives us the distance, the methods, but also the imagination to question a lot of the things we take for granted. And it allows us, in a way, to approach complex issues from multiple perspectives to understand not just what is visible, but often what is hidden and what remains unseen. So in a sense, at least the way I approach research is that it helps bring to light the voices of those that are not heard, to speak about those who cannot easily speak for themselves, and to narrate these alternatives. Often these are alternatives to the dominant way we think about the world, we see the world, we take things for granted. And it's not always about taking position in a debate or having a direct impact on a specific public issue, but about broadening the space of understanding and opening new angles that can give shape to these different experiences and realities that otherwise may remain invisible. And then as the research develops, students, for example, that then ultimately join public service, they implement some of the learnings and the research that they've been encountering in classes. But if you think about the question just from the perspective of those of us that remain in academia and stay within the university, for me, at least, research is often just about challenging many of these orthodoxies, proposing new ways and methods, and casting in the spotlight these forgotten narratives. And that I see very much as the core of what research is about. So at Sciences Po, our scholars generally combine rigor and independence with a deep sense of engagement, whether they want to make the impact and the contribution themselves, or whether their research speaks for them without them intending for the research to make that kind of impact, by simply just really focusing on making complexity visible and connecting knowledge with these lived experiences that ultimately enriches our public understanding of these challenges that societies face. And as you mentioned, that's exactly what the barometer of public trust has done in the past and how important it has become. And generally, this ultimately informs policy, it challenges some of the established narratives and opens new way of seeing these social, economic, and political realities we're confronted with. So ultimately, research matters because it creates the space for creating these alternative perspectives. And it helps societies and researchers imagine differently. And we have the liberty to just imagine and think about an alternative world and a different kind of transformation that we would like to see. And I think that that's the role of researchers, is not just to observe, but just to widen the scope, to bring in this complexity of understanding that then feeds into public debate. And it's about really making knowledge a space for dialogue, and that has an impact, and the impact is often transformative, but also an impact is about taking accountability and speaking truth to power and making the voices often of those that cannot speak for themselves heard.
Mm-hmm. And I feel that what you're describing is a kind of research that is really anchored into concrete, but also sometimes unseen problems or issues that society face and that tend to be underreported or not necessarily tackled in an explicit way. Sciences Po, it seems to me, also encourages, you know, research that can change society, that can affect, you know, new policies that will actually address problems that have been left unaddressed and untackled. I'm thinking of a recent project called Green Transition, which was supported by Horizon Europe and which aims to promote practical solutions to ensure that the implementation of climate policies don't impact adversely disadvantaged communities, as they often do. And in recent years, those kinds of projects have actually delivered some real results. I'm wondering whether there are other examples from Sciences Po-led research that also have led to positive impact on health, on living standards, on educational opportunities, either here in Europe or more widely internationally.
So yes, there are many projects. And as you mentioned, the project on the green transition is a great example of how researchers have connected academic inquiry with social impact. But there are really many, many others across Sciences Po that share this ambition to really link research to these lived realities and shedding light on issues that remain often unseen. And in a way to ensure that social science contributes to a more just and inclusive form of change and transformation. So, for example, researchers at the Center for Social Inequality, they've done remarkable work on education and social mobility. They've studied inequality and how it is reproduced through schools and the creche system, proposing really concrete policies to reduce the gaps. Their findings have directly informed debates on educational reforms in France. Others also working on inequalities and migration, for example, have done research that has informed inquiries specifically of some forms of discrimination. So a colleague has just published a book on police practices in France and racial profiling that has had an impact on some inquiries that were taking place. Others have produced really important work on the insertion of migrants, and this has affected public debates and discussions around how migrants are integrated, the healthcare system. So there's a lot of many colleagues are working on examining inequalities in access to care and how can these be, for example, reduced through better coordination between hospitals, public health authorities and local actors. And their work has often been picked up by public institutions and NGOs. I can speak also a bit more, since that's my center of affiliation, about the work that we do at Sciences Po Law School. And there, our research has been really very deeply engaged with issues of social justice, global inequality, and access to rights. So through the Sciences Po Clinic, there has been a lot of work on actively working with communities, for example, on housing law, on migration rights in France. There are currently projects on algorithmic discrimination, data governance that often affect the marginalized communities generally, globally also, not just in France. And what unites many of these efforts is this shared conviction that research in social science can cross over from academia to impact and to create this open dialogue with institutions, policymakers, but also the local communities, and that can have an impact on society by imagining alternatives that are empirically grounded in rigorous research that is also socially responsive to some of these really pressing questions that we're facing.
Mm-hmm. And for all this great research, of course, you need funding. And, you know, Sciences Po has been quite successful in securing funding, for example, for a major project on learning the lessons from the COVID-19 pandemic, research funding that was obtained from the European Research Council totals, I believe, over 2 million euros. And of course, Sciences Po researchers rely on other forms of funding, including the French National Research Agency. I'm wondering whether this model of public funding, whether it's likely to continue and how stable it is, and whether there are alternatives to public funding that Sciences Po is currently exploring, including, you know, private donations and corporate funding. And then if and when, you know, Sciences Po is seeking corporate funding, are there any risks that are involved in accepting funding from corporate sources?
Yes, so you're absolutely right. Public funding remains absolutely central to how we support research at Sciences Po. Programs as the European Research Council, the ERC, and the Agence Nationale de la Recherche des ANR are crucial. They allow researchers to pursue ambitious long-term projects, to hire PhD students, postdocs with full academic independence. And the projects you mentioned on the consequence of health crisis for education is a perfect example of how such funding supports really rigorous research that is very relevant to society. But the reality is that we also have to rely on private funding. So this is a reality not just of Sciences Po, but of many universities and research in general. And a good example at Sciences Po has been the Project Liberty Initiative. So this is a private funding that is made available to researchers at Sciences Po working on technology, artificial intelligence, and it encourages really research, in-depth research on these topics that are addressed in an interdisciplinary way with impact on society. And these kinds of collaborations open new and important areas of inquiry that complement the public-funded research. However, the key point, and something that we're very careful about, is independence. So whether funding comes from the public or from private sources, the integrity of research must never be compromised. So you were speaking earlier about academic freedom. This is really central at Sciences Po and central for researchers, I would say, everywhere around the world, at a time where these issues are, to some extent, questioned in some settings. At least at Sciences Po, we're very clear and very adamant about making sure that our ethical and institutional safeguards are in place, regardless of the funding that is being committed to the project, and that projects and research remain free from any external influence, so that we can make sure that the data, the results, the people engaged in the projects can be assured that their work remains transparent and that they have the protection that they need to pursue that kind of research. So basically, to answer your question, yes, diversifying funding is important. Public funding for research is in many places around the world decreasing, and therefore it's important to diversify, but it's more important to remain resilient and innovative in how to guarantee that this sources of funding do not affect the type of research that's been undertaken, and that it can continue to take place within a framework of really strong governance and ethical oversight. And in the end, research in the social science really derives its legitimacy from trust. And in order for us to maintain that trust, it depends on our ability to remain both critical and independent researchers, regardless of the source of funding.
Mm-hmm. Another way of maximizing impact of research over and above, of course, ensuring that that you have funding to deliver it is really through international collaborations. It seems to me this is, of course, what the Alliance Program was really set up and designed to do, to increase academic cooperation. There's a recent book by Matthias Thiemann on taming the cycles of finance, which is based in part on collaboration and discussions with researchers at Columbia University under the Alliance Program. And in this context, I'm wondering whether it's possible to quantify or to identify the added value of international collaboration. Is it that collaboration across countries and across institutions, does that enable the best researchers in a specific field to join forces? Or is there something in the nature of academic dialogue itself which is valuable, which acts as a kind of stimulant to energize discussions and academic inquiry?
So I would say that international collaborations are absolutely central to how we think about research at Sciences Po. They allow us really to cross these intellectual and geographical boundaries, to approach these common challenges from different traditions, and to enrich our methods and perspective through dialogue. So you mentioned the Alliance Program. So this is really one of our most enduring and fruitful collaborations, and it has really fostered genuine transatlantic exchange, not only through the joint research and mobility programs, but through a shared commitment to rethinking the social sciences in this global context. And over the years, many of our colleagues have benefited from the Alliance framework, whether developing projects that combine the strength of the different institutions, so whether it's Polytechnique, Columbia University, or Paris 1, as well as Sciences Po, either developing projects that combine the strength of the different institutions in the areas that we all have in common. So we work on political economy, law, the climate, public policy, among many others. And one particular initiative that I find really interesting is the co-teaching model. So we've done that together with Sciences Po and Columbia University, where faculty from both Sciences Po and Columbia design courses together, teach them together to a cohort of students at both institutions. And what is really fascinating about this project is that these collaborations often begin in the classroom, but lead to really lasting research partnerships. New projects, new books, new publications, comparative work that extends well beyond the initial exchange. So it's a wonderful example of how teaching itself can be a catalyst for research.
And it seems to me that an area where research can have a crucial impact today is the area of democracy, and particularly democracy in its connection with AI, because this is one of the key areas of transformations and fast-paced transformations of our world, which is raising a lot of questions and a lot of concerns for many citizens. Under the leadership of the Sciences Po Open Institute for Digital Transformations, there's two new projects on AI and democracy that emerged, and that will analyze patterns that underpin the evolution of public opinion in Europe, as well as the role played by large language models in online public debates. I'm wondering, given also the fact that you are, you know, a legal expert and that that you teach also in the law school, what threats you see as AI evolves, and what threats do you see AI posing to democracy? What kinds of regulation can help limit the risks that AI poses to democracy, both in terms of privacy, for example, and personal freedoms?
So AI raises really profound questions for democracy, not only because of the speed and the scale at which it transforms communication, but also because it reshapes the very conditions under which we form opinions, deliberate, make collective choices. So these large language models, for instance, generate persuasive content, they can amplify bias, and they influence how information circulates online. And this poses a real risk for privacy, it poses a risk for autonomy, but also the integrity of the public debate. So as you were mentioning, at Sciences Po, the mission of the Open Institute for the Digital Transformation is really to re-examine the digital world from a social science perspective. And it draws on historical, economic, legal, and sociological and political analysis to understand and explain these transformations brought about by these digital innovations, and to examine how these technologies themselves adapt to social change. So the aim of the Institute is to foster this important research precisely on these issues that link that to democracy and public debate, and analyze really how the digital tools and the AI system shape and transform the evolution of public opinion in Europe. How do we study these, the role of these large language models, and how this will affect these online discussions that then ultimately will have an impact on how we think about law and regulation. So this kind of research is essential because it helps us not only understand, but also anticipate how these technologies will affect democratic life before their effect becomes normalized or invisible. So it's we're really at a critical moment where we need to dig deeper and try to understand what this is doing to the society around us. So as you were mentioning, at the law school, we're thinking about these questions. We're thinking about these questions, as I mentioned earlier, on through that Track AI project that I'm personally involved in, where we're bringing together lawyers, economists, computer scientists to examine how these AI systems are governed. How can we better govern them? What is the legal framework that we need so that we can protect basic rights, that we can create accountability in this increasingly automated environment? And the approach is generally very critical, global, but also interdisciplinary, because again, you can't have these conversations in silos, and you need to question how these models work and how they generate power, inequality, but also knowledge production. So it's about the epistemology behind it, and how then this is embedded in the design and the deployment of the AI systems themselves, but also the AI firms that are producing that language and these models. So I think you're absolutely right that we need to take these questions seriously. We need to take these questions seriously for democracy, and we do. And I think that's really what is essential here, and that we need to rethink the broader social and political implications of thinking about AI in general, and that we can assure on the one hand that we can benefit from these innovations and that they remain compatible and useful, but also that we're aware that we need to understand how they work, we need to generate transparency, we need to generate accountability, and we need to think about these questions with the public interest in mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'd like to finish by coming back to students themselves and how they benefit from being in an environment where they're taught by people who are at the, you know, on the front lines of research. This is really also something that is perhaps one of the elements that is emphasized at Sciences Po, the fact that there is a very, very close intrication between students and researchers.
Exactly. So as I said earlier, so we have about 250 permanent faculty members, they're researchers, and they teach. So we have a very close connection between research and teaching. At the School of Research, all of our classes are taught by full-time researchers. So these are the members of the permanent faculty. And students benefit, in my opinion, enormously from being taught by professors who are also active researchers. In a sense, research grounds teaching. It gives it depth, it gives it perspective, and keeps it from being stale. It's the difference between just learning and learning how to think. So research often, if not always, begins with questions. And in pursuing these questions, researchers encounter multiple answers. So some are reassuring answers, some are unsettling answers. And in this process of questioning, re-examining, that's really what keeps academic inquiry alive. And it demands rigor. So as a researcher, we're always fact-checking our sources, we're cross-verifying the data, we're running the regressions again, or rechecking the answers to our qualitative inquiries. We're confronting these alternative accounts, but also very aware and paying attention to the perspectives, the theories, and the books that have been left out or marginalized. So in a sense, we are constantly requiring our methods to be aware of what is included in sort of the mainstreamed part of our work, but also those that remain outside of it. And this requires patience, but it also requires a lot of courage to ask the hard questions. So when you teach from within a research practice, you're not just simply transmitting knowledge, you're inviting students into this process of inquiry. And this process of inquiry is about how we know what we know. How do we ask the questions that get us there, and how knowledge itself evolves and how it constantly is in motion and transformation. Of course, the real world matters and it's important to look at practice, but it needs to initially be grounded with a hands-on engagement within research so that our understanding of the real world can be deep and not just superficial. So the practical and professional dimension, in a sense, comes later. What research does is it provides these conceptual analytical foundations that allow the students to approach these complex issues with depth, independence of thought. And I think that changes the classroom dynamics entirely. I think students, in a sense, that are part, feel that they're part of a living conversation, that their learning isn't fixed or static, that it's part of the debate that they can also contribute to, and this is something that keeps evolving. And I also think that research and academics that are researchers and are teachers help their students understand humility. Because in a sense, you know how difficult it is to collect the data, how to design the method, how to investigate, and how to write. And these things generally need a lot of patience, it needs persistence, a lot of trial and error. And in a sense, you spend your life reading, engaging with theory, with the work of your peers and the reviewers who are constantly pushing you to refine your thinking. Every review of a publication, whether it's a paper or a book, reminds you that you could have done things differently. Why didn't you ask this question? Why did you use this methodology? How could you have done it differently? So in a sense, you are very aware constantly that every argument and every point you make can be challenged or seen from another perspective. So this really not only humbles you, but gives you this critical spirit that you know that nothing is ever perfect, at least not in the eyes of everyone. And what matters is really how to keep improving, keep questioning, and keep learning. And that humility is something you bring into the classroom. So it helps you teach students that knowledge is never final, that critique is part of growth, and that intellectual confidence comes not from certainty, but from the ability to see this complexity. And personally, I say this as a researcher first. So research is not something I do on the side. It's really the lens through which I see teaching, institution, and society. And for me, the university's strength lies precisely in keeping that link alive between the production of knowledge and its transmission, between theory and the questions that shape the world. And therefore, learning from researchers and having researchers in the classroom means engaging really with a way of thinking rather than with a fixed body of knowledge. It offers this model of intellectual integrity, the humility, the discipline to test ideas, the patience to refine them, to write, but also the courage to defend them when you're challenged, and to defend them with evidence, with rigorous methods, with rigorous research. And here it cultivates the ability to see this complexity, to embrace critique, and ultimately really to speak truth to power, but only after being able to defend your ideas and to have done the work, the hard work to really be able to earn that right.
Professor Walkett, thank you for this eloquent defense of research at Sciences Po. We're very grateful to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Vis-a-vis is brought to you by the Alliance Program, a partnership between Columbia University, Paris 1 Panthéon-Sorbonne, Sciences Po, and École Polytechnique. This podcast is produced by Rachel Kahn and Georgia O'Neill, and I'm Emmanuel Catan. Special thanks to Esther Jackson and her colleagues at Columbia Libraries. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on your podcast platform. If you're interested in learning more about the Alliance Program and how we support academic exchanges, research, and collaboration between the US and France, please visit us at alliance.columbia.edu or follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for listening.